Greetings and welcome. You're listening to Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. I'm Catherine Davis. On today's program, we have two parts we're going to be sharing. First will be a report back from the weekend workshop that I attended with Sergio Magaña Osio Kyoto. And it was on energetic healing, psychic surgery, and the obsidian wand. Also on Quetzalcoatl, the climbing serpent, kundalini energy to heal the chakras, and Palladian initiation and the eight bands of healing, awakening the powers of manifestation and the ability to heal. And in our second segment, we're going to play an interview with Frank Alapini, an author and thinker of multidisciplinary theoretical and practical knowledge. And he's going to be sharing some insights from his two books, Abode of Divinities, Toward a Universal Philosophy, Science, and Spirituality, and Divine Humanism, Creating the Happiest Society. So stay tuned. So, I did take that three-day workshop or series of workshops with Sergio Magaña. And one of the things that I have to say that I was most impressed with, and it shouldn't be because I've studied with Sergio in the past, but I really came to understand the full power of this Toltec science and to fully regard it as a science. It is so much more than some quaint cultural presence or philosophy. It is indeed a great, powerful knowledge that is as great as any knowledge you might find in the West, or what you might think of as the esoteric teachings of the Christian faith or any other kind of practice. It's amazing because it really goes down into some of the fundamental principles of reality. And this calendar, this Aztec calendar, is more than just the cultural version of the Aztecs. It is an accumulation and a simulation of the greatest knowledge of the Americas as it comes together from the earlier calendars, which include the Mayan calendar, the Aztec calendar, and the Toltec calendar. So it's just amazing because it does map out the energies of every single day, and it allows you to understand the power of that day. And based on your birth, it will give you the power and give you some sense of what you came into the world with, what your mission in life is, what your strengths and weaknesses are. So it is indeed a science, and it's a science that looks at not just the manifestations of time through the expression of what they call suns or ages of time. And when we interviewed Sergio about his book on 2012, it was really about the emergence of the sixth sun, which we are in the middle of that transition right now, and the full emergence will be more recognizable in 2021, maybe 2021 to 2025, depending on how you interpret it. But the real power also in this understanding is the way in which he teaches us to transcend time and to move through the levels of existence. So fundamental to the existence is the principle of four. And four represents how reality is structured. So you could think of it as the four seasons. You can think of it as the four solstices and equinoxes. You could think of it as the four elements of nature, water, fire, air, and earth. You can think of it as the aspects of the human being. And there are so many ways in which you can interpret this four, or the ways in which the four manifests into our reality. Now, at this point, I in no way am claiming expertise in this. I'm simply embarking upon this journey, or I would say deepening the journey, because I have been using these practices for quite a number of years now, and every time I have an opportunity to go deeper into that understanding, I take that opportunity, or I should say that I'm blessed when this opportunity arises for me. And this particular series of workshops for me were extremely powerful because it explains things in a fundamental way and in a practical way. I would really suggest that when Sergio comes back to New York, that you consider taking a look at his work and going a little bit deeper. Of course, if you want to check out his work now, you can do that by going to sergiomagana.com, sergiomagana.com, and you can delve a little bit deeper in the kind of things that he does offer. Primarily, he works in Mexico City, but he occasionally comes to New York City. So I'm going to take a moment to try to explain some of what I experienced in the works. In the first class, which was really about psychic surgery and the obsidian wand. And this is a little bit difficult to comprehend, psychic surgery, because what does it mean really? So from my perspective, psychic surgery is a lot like any other kind of spiritual healing, where you bring the person in touch with their deepest issues. It could be a physical illness, it could be an emotional dilemma. In the class, though, he chose physical problems to demonstrate because it's clearer to see. But it works basically upon the fundamental principle of getting the person to go deeper and deeper and deeper into the root of that experience, and then being willing through their breath and their force of will and understanding to release that deep ailment. And in the process, the healer helps to pull that energy out. So it's really a cooperation between the person who's implementing the healing and the person being healed. And it uses the obsidian wand as a form of a separation to disconnect those deep trails of debris within the body and pulling it out into the obsidian into clay, which you would be holding in your hand. But what it does is it takes you to transcend to the different levels of existence. And that's really where the power of healing is in this Toltec science, that you go deeper into the layers from which this ailment is created, and you go through the layers which the ailment is being held into place, and you have to disassemble that ailment and return the physical elements to the physical world, to the earth and the elements of the earth, and the sort of the energy of the spirit of it. You have to to move it through the layers of reality, taking it back to the source of its creation. And it's a really magnificent and very clear and efficient process, though, you know, there is a learning curve with it. And for me, this was so magnificent to see it being explained in a way that was very, very scientific, based on a cosmogony or cosmology of reality of the existence. So that was pretty amazing for me, because I've been doing healings for a long time, and I've been using the obsidian mirror and other forms of curandissimo, and as well as the energy healing that I do, and I've been able to, you know, follow the function and see it work. But to get deeper into the understanding and the science of it is truly magnificent for one who is engaged in the healing process and learning how to go deeper into that process. The second part of the series was about Quetzalcoatl and climbing the serpent, or dealing with the kundalini energy to heal the chakras. And what was really interesting about the teachings of the Quetzalcoatl is that they have two realities that they work with. There's the day and the night. And the night is really talking about the Nahuatl, or the hidden. And so the kundalini work, of course, even in traditional, or as we understand the Eastern traditions, the kundalini travels up through the chakras, but coming through the spine. But also in this teaching, it shows us that we have basic chakras in the back that relate to what we would consider to be the hidden. And it's very powerful, because it takes you to open up and give you access to the dream world or dream time, so that you can be lucid in your dreams, and ultimately to bring that lucidity into your waking life, so that you would have a more direct connection with these worlds. According to the teachings of the Toltec, the reality is manifested in the hidden world. So if you have a problem, we understand it in our psychology as being part of the unconscious or subconscious, and that's where these problems are manifested and held. But according to the Toltec tradition, you can go deeper than that and go into the space where the injury is being created, or the misconception is being created, or where, because of a function of your fears or discontent, we are actually creating our problems. We are actually creating our problems in the dream world. And once we hold those problems in the invisible dream world, they ultimately become manifest within our lives. So part of the healing process is to go into the invisible part of yourself and dissolve the problem in that space. And, you know, they refer to it in a way as like going into your cave, going into the subconscious. But you're going there with lucidity, so you can see the nature of the problem. And you do the healing, the same healing that you might do in the physical world, only you would do it on an energetic level in the dream world, and that makes it very, very powerful. And so the climbing serpent kundalini energy is to awaken the chakras that are actually in the back. And what this system teaches is that your chakras, as you might see at the seven chakras through this system of Ayurveda, really shine through the front, and their power is in the front of the body, because they are what controls and guides and has power over your living and waking life. And these other chakra system that is in the back of the body gives you power and into the hidden life, into that which would normally be unknown and invisible to you. So it can be a very powerful process. And the chakras are different. They're not like aligned up the center the way the Ayurvedic chakras are. These chakras are in the back, at various places in the back. And what's interesting is that it also gives you the system of understanding how your body works in terms of the right back would be what's manifesting in the world, and the left back of the chakra system would be what's manifesting in the invisible world. So if you want to manifest into your life, you take the energy from the left to the right. So you're taking it from the invisible to the visible. And if you have something visible that you want to disintegrate, you do that by taking it out of the structure of the physical and moving it into the invisible, or into the dream realm, or the invisible realm, where you can consciously disintegrate it, deal with it. So it's a very, very interesting system, and I think it gives us a whole new window into this healing structure of the chakras and how it plays out in our reality and in the invisible reality as well. And another really important piece of this workshop was a two-day structure in which we had the initiation, the Pleiadian initiation, and the eight bands of healing, awakening the powers of manifestation and the ability to heal. Now, as a part of all of this system, what it does is it takes you into chakra systems that are beyond your physical body, in which we can connect to the initiating power of the Pleiadian system. So we actually don't just have chakras in our body, chakras in that reach into the earth, but we also have our chakra system reaches into our atmosphere, the moon, the sun, and the planetary systems that we might be related to in one way or another. And through this chakra system, we can move through these different bands of reality and use that to help us to heal or to actually manifest. And I'm not going to go too deeply into this. And so the way the system works is that these nine bands of healing are divided up. And, you know, earlier I was speaking about the representation of the different four systems. So, you know, in terms of earth, water, fire, air. So this nine bands of healing is a little bit like that. It takes you into a system where you can actually divide your reality up into the earth. So the structure of the earth, or the energy of the earth, is what holds something in place. So if you have a diseased state, or if you have an enlightened state, it's the power of the earth that gives that substance in our physical reality. But out of the power of the earth comes the elements themselves, fire, water, earth, air. And that makes up the structure, the particles, everything that we are made of come through those elements. And then we have our physical reality, which is our body, our thoughts, our minds, our emotions, such as that. And then above that, we have the layer of the consciousness, but the consciousness, our energy field, is held, like what we think of as the structure of our body, has what you might think of as an outline or a mold that holds everything in place. And it's a part of the physical reality that's invisible, are all of the molecules and the air and all the things that make up our structure is held into place by an energetic band of reality that holds everything into place. And above that sort of outline or energetic mold or band, we have our auric space. And so in the auric space is where the, say, where the material comes from the invisible into the into your field of energy. And then above that are the begin to move into the levels of what we think of as the structure of creation. So what happens is, and you know, I'm sort of glossing over a lot of it, but what happens is that the structure of creation falls through no matter what your thoughts might be. So if you have a thought, oh, I'm a failure, that's a thought that's coming out of something, an error in judgment. But what happens is once that thought is entered into this field of creation, it becomes a germ or a sort of a seed. And that represents the creation of something. And you can create something bad and harmful as well as you can create something good. So once the seed is created, it moves into your auric field. And then the auric field, from there, it goes into what we call the mold or the structure that holds your body together. Then from there, it goes into the actual body itself. And so, in essence, we are giving instructions to that power of the earth to hold something in place because of our belief system, because of what we've created in our dream world. So if you're having nightmares in the dream world, you're going to create nightmares in your existing reality. So as we're moving through these bands of reality in this system, you're really taking the structures to pull apart whatever is underlying your health issues. So it becomes a very powerful way of understanding what part of the process that you break back into the elements of the earth and what part of the issue do you have to take back into the invisible realm, into the dream realm, and then sending it back to the source of its creation where it can be dissolved back into energy. So it's a magnificent process. I'll be working with it more and certainly talking about it more. And those of us who took this course are coming together in a bit of a working group so that we can build these, our muscles a little bit more in this whole process. So it's really a very, very, very interesting and powerful understanding of how this all really works and how we can very powerfully be the masters or the creators of our health and of our reality, and we have equal power to uncreate something as to create it, just by understanding that we have these two realities. One is the tonal or the awakening state. Your eyes are open, you're looking outward. The other is the nahual, the dreaming state. Your eyes are closed and you're looking inward. And we're moving reality, our conscious awareness, our ability to move through and back and forth through these states with understanding and with power. And I think that that is a most magnificent way to be able to engage in the world by understanding the full spectrum of our reality and learning to heal ourselves and each other based on that understanding. So I'm going to, if I can, bring Sergio back to talk about this more because he can explain it so much better than I am. I'm just budding in my deeper understanding, you know, and moving into the blossoming stage with it. And I'm talking off the top of my head and not giving you the detail because there is a tremendous amount of detail involved. So we hope to be looking at this a lot more. And I invite you to check out Sergio Magana's website, sergiomagana.com, sergiomagana.com, and check it out. It's an amazing thing. And stay tuned. Coming up, we have our interview with Frank Alapini. You're listening to Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. And on today's program, we have been playing some music for you. We started out with our theme, Frog Dancing, by David Anthony Clark. Coming up is Beautiful by India Arie and Brave New World by Brave New World. Stay tuned. We'll be right with you. Guest today is Reverend Dr. Frank Alapini, and he is a thinker to whom a multidisciplinary theoretical and practical knowledge is necessary to create the happiest and most egalitarian society. His main fields of interest are theology, philosophy, music, writing, and medicine. He has earned a Doctor of Medicine degree from the Faculty of Health Sciences of Cotonou, Benin, and he's a Master of Divinity from the Unification Theological Seminary of New York, and he is a member of the American Academy of Religion. And he's also the author of two books. One is called Divine Humanism, Creating the Happiest Society, and another book is called Abode of Divinities, Toward a Universal Philosophy, Science, and Spirituality. And I want to welcome you, Frank.
Thank you very much, Kathy, for inviting me for today's show.
Can you start by telling our listeners a little bit more about yourself?
Thank you very much, Kathy. Good afternoon to all the dear listeners of WBAI. I'm very glad to be on the show today to share some wonderful ideas with you. To answer your question, Kathy, I would say that I'm doing this work out of necessity and also because I have been a little bit predestined to do that. Let's say when I was in my early childhood, the diviner of my father, he named me, Doto, which is in my language is called healer. So I grew up with that consciousness of wanting to be useful to people, particularly in the health system. Mm-hmm. So naturally, when I graduated from high school, I wanted to go to the medical school, immediately, and I passed the national exam in Benin, and I was fortunate to get the entrance to that school. And then I studied medicine. But while doing that, I also had the consciousness, that was telling me something is important in the field of religion and spirituality. So around the age of 10, I started reading the Bible, and I was very interested in what was written in the Old Testament and also in the New Testament. But I couldn't choose any particular religion or spiritual school until the age of 16, when I met a movement and that works for the unification and world peace. So I invested myself into that. So I graduated from medical school in 2003, but in my practice, I saw that people were sick physically, but the problem is it was not primarily physical. So I saw that most of the problem were coming from a malfunction or a dysfunction of the mind. And I'm very glad to be presenting this topic here today. So people make a lot of mistakes, and then they come to the hospital to be healed. And I was a little bit frustrated about that. I said, why should I be sitting here and waiting for people to make mistakes and come to me, while I can do a work that will help them avoid those mistakes? And that is in the field of philosophy. Now, spiritually speaking, I have been confronted to a problem during my practice. One time, I faced a young girl around the age of 10 with a simple problem, like a leg problem. We call it in French, osteomyelite in French. So we were three practitioners trying to help that girl, but we were not succeeding. And the father of the girl told us, I saw you working, and I believe you have done your best. Please let me take the child, go to the village, and try some spiritual healing. And we gave him the authorization. 1 week later, the daughter came jumping, laughing, and everything. So I questioned myself. I told myself, the Western medicine I have learned at school is limited. I need more. Mm-hmm. So that's why when I got the opportunity to come and study theology, I grabbed it and I come to New York. So that's why I'm here today.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. So did you ever have the opportunity to study with those spiritual healers that were in Benin to grasp that part of your culture? Or did your education find you alienated from understanding that part of your culture?
Actually, I was born from a very powerful spiritual family myself. But seeing the way things were managed, the result in the society, you know, we have all that power, magical power, voodoo power, but we have been colonized anyway.
Yes.
So something told me it's not that powerful. So something was missing. So I need to understand those things. And the other thing was, since I was educated with the Bible, I kind of come off, I did not like the shedding of blood. In our culture, many things, knowledge are transferred through the blood. And during my attempts to grasp that knowledge from our culture, the teacher I have met, there were those who wanted to sacrifice animals in order to do rituals, in order to transfer those knowledge. So it was something I couldn't understand, and my consciousness told me not to go that way for now. So, but I heard that other teachers in my country, they do impart the knowledge without requiring people to sacrifice animal and all those things. So mm-hmm. hopefully I'll be getting in touch with them during my current work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, I just asked that as an aside. I've had similar issues with trying to connect with traditional African knowledge or teachings of, you know, down the lineage of the priesthood of the, and that's where I always got stuck. I'm interesting that you got stuck at the same place. So now you are involved in the theology and the spirituality. So how did you begin to pull this together into your work as a physician, or have you transitioned from being a physician to being a theologian?
No, I haven't forgotten about my original profession. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to solve the mind problem temporarily, mm-hmm. and then go back to the medical mm-hmm. to the medical field. So I believe life is a whole. So we need not to separate the needs of the mind from the needs of the spirit from the needs of the body. Mm-hmm. So I'm upgrading my medicine. I want to be a doctor that heals the mind, that heals the spirit, and that heals the body. So that's why theology and mm-hmm. philosophy for me is a tool, and psychology as well, mm-hmm. are tools that help me deal with mind problems. And then spirituality, understanding spirituality and rituals and all those stuff will help get rid of energy problems, like spiritual problems. And naturally, medicine will help me deal with bodily problems. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of trying to invent a new kind of doctor. And I believe it won't be me alone doing that kind of work. And there will be a transfer of knowledge. And there will be a lot of many social healers of that kind, mm-hmm. working at the three levels, from the mind to the spirit and the body, integrating. So it's a new field, open. And we'll be bringing a lot of contributions to help people improve their lives. So we will be acknowledging all the efforts that other people have been doing, because, you know, there are so many philosophers, there are so many spiritual schools and religious schools. My work is not denying everything they have been doing. My work is to acknowledge the good stuff in all those things and how we can upgrade all those things and harmonize them, and bring even new, interesting things that people have in themselves, not only me, but other people as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Beautiful. It is true, because there are many spiritual teachings and different ways of healing and different cultural understanding, but the harmony is what is missing.
Exactly.
Especially the harmony with the knowledge of Western medicine.
Exactly.
That's where there's been a real barrier.
Exactly.
So that's very valuable. So you've gone through a period where you've done an enormous amount of research.
Yes.
So can you speak for a minute about all these different genres and worlds of research that go into the concepts that you're describing in your books? Where have you reached? Have you looked at Egyptian? Have you looked at Asian? Where did you pull the information from?
I'm glad you asked that question, Kathy, mm-hmm. because there is one proverb. You say, we don't care about the origin of the medicine. We just want the medicine. You're sick, you take the medicine, you're healed. That's the end of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So facing the philosophical problem and the confusion in which the world is in right now, which is generating so many conflicts and wars and misunderstandings and all that at the individual level, family level, social level, between nations and between blocks of nations in the world. I believed in order to find the answer to all that, to heal all that, we need to understand the origin of everything,
mm.
which is a big question in life. And some people call that origin the original source or the spirit or God. I like that term God because it is simple. So I want listeners to understand that whenever I use the term God, it means original source from everything, at least to start our teaching. Mm-hmm. So from that point, I researched the topic of God seriously, because I understood that it is the center of all religions, and 84% of the world population is religious. So I needed to deal with that issue of God, since we have so many ideas about God. Mm-hmm. So I went back at the origin, and the oldest civilization I could find was the Sumerian civilization in Mesopotamia.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of coincidence, I don't know, that Mesopotamian civilization is the same thing that started Genesis in the Bible.
Hmm.
Adam was created according to Genesis, between the two rivers of Euphrates or in Mesopotamia. So, and his descendants, Abraham, migrated later to the land of Canaan. So I started with Mesopotamia, and I discovered that that country was a country where people worshipped many gods. So I moved from there to Egypt, which is also a very ancient civilization. And that was the same thing that I discovered, polytheism. And I studied Egypt, also ancient Greece, and the ancient Mayan in Mesoamerica here, mm-hmm. the Indian, the Native Americans. I studied the pantheons, the gods, and the philosophy, the religious philosophy. From there, I moved to the Taoism of China. Then I moved to India, Hinduism, Sikhism, Jainism, which are three great religions from India, mm-hmm. and Buddhism as well. And they are inspiring the New Age, mm-hmm. which I have also studied, and theosophy. So I studied all those religions, Shintoism, African traditional religions, the voodoo of my country, Benin. Also, I went to the philosophy and the teachings of theosophy, the unification movement, which is a new religious movement, and they have a second coming of the Messiah, like Christianity. And also, I went to Swedenborg, Emanuel Swedenborg, who was a great scientist and scholar of a Swedish scholar of the 18th century, and he had a lot of out-of-body experiences, and he wrote several books, and I studied his thoughts as well. From after that, I also studied the esoteric teachings of Manly P. Hall. He's a great Freemason. I went to the viewpoints of the Illuminati, also the Universal White Brotherhood is another esoteric movement, and the Rosicrucians. Those are the major esoteric movements. So I needed to know what do those people think about the issue of God. And from that point, I would come to my own understanding. So you tie the new rope to the old one. Mm-hmm. So I needed to know first what's going on and synthesize all that and harmonize that, and then bring my own inspiration that I believe at this stage can help a lot.
Beautiful. And that was very, very helpful. When you start to give your explanation of these concepts, then people have an understanding how you derive that. And I think that gives it a lot of power. We will be back in just a few moments. And welcome back. My esteemed guest today is Reverend Dr. Frank Alapini. And I want to say welcome back, Frank, and thank you for joining me today.
First, I want to let the listeners know that in our society, we communicate and we use language. And when we use words, we need to make sure that the word that a person is using means the same thing for him or her, as well as for those who are listening. So, and I have discovered through my research that is not the case. People have various ideas about those important concepts that you have just mentioned. So we will be taking a look successively at the mind, the spirit, memory, dream, intuition, inspiration, and all that. So I'll start by looking at the dictionary definition. What does the dictionary says about those concepts? And then I will look at historical contributors, those who have thought about those concepts and made some recommendations. And finally, I will bring my own insight. So I will begin with the mind. According to the dictionary, the mind first is a consciousness that originates in the brain, and it is manifested especially in thoughts, perception, emotion, will, memory, and imagination. Those are all big words. A second definition given by the dictionary is mind as conscious and unconscious. I want to draw the attention on this later term, unconscious. So, conscious and unconscious processes that direct and influence mental and physical behavior. A third definition is mind as the principle of intelligence. So, and fourth, faculty of thinking, reasoning. Now, let me introduce some very important contributors in history concerning this concept of mind. The first, which is one of my favorite, is Hermes Trismegistus. He is an ancient priest and astrologer, diviner, and philosopher of ancient Egypt. To him, mind, there is something called the universal mind, and that is God for him. And he called the Son of God the Word of Reason, because the mind thinks. So the son of thought, the thinking, is the word or reason. So when people use the term son of God, it means sometimes word or reason, which is the son, the product of reasoning or thinking or the universal mind. Hmm. So this is a very, very important things that people need to know. And it has been said more than 400 years ago. Many people don't know. According to Hermes, in the mind dwells the secret of immortality. And he said, let him that is endued with mind know himself to be immortal, and that the cause of death is knowing only the body which is subject to death. So if you want to believe in immortality, put your efforts and your work, your attention on something that is immortal. But if you focus on the body that dies, then you don't have far to go. That's what Hermes is saying. And to Hermes, a revelation was given by God, and he reported it as such. God was telling him, I, the mind of the universe, come not to the wicked or the covetous, because they cannot understand me. Therefore, I am unwelcome. This means that in order to enjoy the power of the mind, we need to stay away from evil and wrongdoings, because all that is like bad water for the tree of our mind, and it jeopardizes its function, so it cannot function very well. So we need to, that's why those who are aspiring to good things and all that, religious people, of thinkers, social workers, those who use their profession for good, all those people, the genius come to them, the mind of the universe comes to them and inspire them more and give them bright ideas for the good of humanity. Another contributor that talked about the mind was Plato. And Plato, who was a Greek philosopher of antiquity, said, reason should control emotions and desires, especially the sexual ones, because he has witnessed that in society, people don't behave rationally. So they just do what their body asks them to do. So he said, in order to solve problems, we need to trust reason and let reason dictate our movement. And Aristotle said the same thing, such as Augustine. He was a church father. Augustine said, faith, reason, and free will are complementary, but only the grace of God can save you from the original sin. Thomas Aquinas was the greatest Catholic theologian of the Middle Ages. He was a doctor of faith. And he said, reason is the fundamental nature of human beings. Others may say otherwise. René Descartes, he said, I think, therefore I am. He said, the soul is the mind, the same thing as the mind to him. And he said, it is immortal. Now, let me go to another philosopher, who is Blaise Pascal. Blaise Pascal was a French philosopher, a younger contemporary of Descartes. He lived a few years after Descartes. And he said, all the human dignity dwells in thinking. So that's what makes us human. If we don't think, we are like animals. Helena Blavatsky said, she was the founder of theosophy. And she lived and died during the 19th century. And she said, a person of great intellect, so mind, still mind, great intellect and too much knowledge may enslave or save others. So it is something powerful. It depends on how you use it. And she also said, a person without intellect is a brute in human form. So in order to solve social problems, we really need to make a good use of our mind. And on the topic of mind, contributors on mind, I want to present a great man called Manly P. Hall. And he was a great philosopher, and he wrote several important spiritual books. And he said, no faculty equals the rational intellect. The person that does not comprehend the dignity of the reasoning power is not really living, but is a dead person. And he added, it is righteousness associated with rationality which make a person spiritual, rather than spirituality being the cause of rationality and righteousness. In other words, it's not how much magic you possess that make you good. It's how your mind drives you to use that magic that you have, or spiritual power, or whatever names people want to call spirituality, spiritual powers. And finally, a phrase that I liked very much from Manly Hall was, he said, war is the irrefutable evidence of irrationality. That you go to war only when you don't know what to do, when your mind does not have the answer to the problem at hand. So you give in to emotions, to irrationality, to chaos. So, and I believe a way in which we can solve world conflicts today is to trust the power of reasoning. I believe if human beings put their minds seriously to it, they can find answers to most of the trouble we have today and fight their old emotions.
And I know, Frank, that we have so much more to share, but believe it or not, we are just about out of time. I think we have to just revisit this several more times. You have two beautiful books. One is called Abode of Divinities, Toward a Universal Philosophy, Science, and Spirituality. And what is the general subject of this book?
The general subject is the divine. What is the nature of the divine? And it covers the what people call God the Father, the gods, minor gods with G, small g, from various religions, and the human gods. Some people have been made God. For example, the topic of Jesus Christ is very important. He's called the Messiah. He's called God. And also other peoples as well have been called gods. And I have discussed also the topic of the Holy Spirit. And to my amazement, it was like I saw that concept of Holy Spirit is present in almost all scriptures of the world, in the Bible, in the Quran, in ancient Egyptian creation myth, and in Indian philosophy, Shakti, and all that. So I decided I wanted to harmonize all those views and added my own spiritual experiences, because I have been in contact with some kind of energy, cosmic energy, which manifests, and its features are exactly as it's described in the Bible. Some kind of energy that comes to the top of the head. New Age people will call it through the crown chakra. So two different terminology. How can people reconcile an energy coming through the crown chakra in the New Age with Christian or Jewish talking about the Holy Spirit coming down on people? So I tried to discuss that as well. I mentioned the nature of God, his fatherhood. Why do people call God father? Is there any meaning in calling God mother? I researched the viewpoints of people like Sylvia Brown. She is a great American psychic, and she wrote several books. And I visited the work of Hans Kung as well, and he talked about God the Mother. And finally, Hermes Trismegistus, he also talked about an hermaphrodite God. It's like male-female God. So what's the nature of God when it comes to sex? So I try to explain what people need to know on that topic as well.
Beautiful. And that's Abode of Divinities. And your other book is called Divine Humanism, Creating the Happiest Society.
Divine Humanism is about how, once we understand the cause of the cosmos, the origin of everything, and how do we apply that knowledge to living in a human society? Since we too, according to some cultures, are called gods. For example, Jesus called people gods. Many do not know. Jainism called human being gods. So if we are destined to become divine beings, how do we do that? What philosophy can we apply? What is the meaning of the religion? What is the meaning of magic? What is the meaning of alchemy? What is human nature? What is quantum physics? What is the nature of the Holy Spirit, the fire that comes to mind? How can we explain that in terms of medicine, medical terms? How do we harmonize that with Reiki, with Qigong from China? Those are healing techniques using energy. How do we educate people? Should we keep information available to everybody, or should we hide part of it? What is the meaning of politics? I discuss all that
in this book. Okay, Divine Humanism, Creating the Happiest Society, and my guest is Reverend Dr. Frank Alapini.
This is the time for reason. Be proud as any man. You're ancient as the land you roam. Keep worshiping the sun. And no one has a hold on you while freedom knows your name.